Welcome to Hype episode 162. My name is Selena and I'm here with Pam this week to discuss the most recent and most exciting and entertaining and fun entertainment news stories. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Selena. I feel like we haven't done this in so long, but I know we recorded last week.
Feel this way?
I know, but I feel like it's been longer. Maybe the week I know has just the feeling. Been long.
Yeah, it some weeks are definitely longer than others, and you kind of fall out of the loop a little bit, I think. But, you know, the good thing is that there's always going to be another hype, so we get it back into it. I don't know what I was going to say. So you broke me. I was doing so well.
Sorry. We're the constant. That's what you were getting at. For better or worse, we're here every week.
Aw, and now I have lost feels, damn it.
Oh,
I'm doubly broken now. Anyway, we have to trudge through it, I guess. We actually have a lot of exciting stuff to get into in this week's episode of Hype, including some JK Rowling news that you may or may not have heard about, and some movie trailers and TV news, and a Twitter story that I'm sure we're all going to be, you know, we have about 280 things to say about that one, so stay tuned for that. We have TV show of the week and listener feedback, a lot of listener feedback to get through this week, so that's going to be really great to hear what all of you guys have to say. And then if you are a Patreon subscriber and you support the show, then you can look forward to a bonus discussion about Star Trek Discovery, which we have both seen and which we will be talking about. Neither myself or Pam are Star Trek fans, so we're coming to this with completely fresh eyes, and I look forward to hearing what Pam has to say about it. I know I have some thoughts, wavy line. So that's going to be interesting. And you can check that out as well as our videos and our bonus segments over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And we've got a bunch of bonus segments over there for you to enjoy. So if you haven't checked the site in a while, then surprise! There should be a lot to dive into there. And if you want to get in contact with us about the show, or if you have any suggestions for us or feedback on what we talked about, you can do that in many ways. You can tweet us at HypeableHype. You can email us, which is hypepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. And you can go on our Instagram, which is HypeableHype. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. I've been tumbling a little bit recently, so I just have a lot of feels about certain fandoms at the moment.
How exciting.
I know.
I was lurking on Tumblr the other day, and I saw, you know, my favorite thing about Tumblr is that, like, the Merlin fans are still strong over there.
Yeah.
And I saw I saw that the Merlin AU we don't deserve, but we need, which was like a Merlin space AU on the USS Camelot. Just imagine. That's sure there's fanfic out there somewhere, but it's great.
There definitely is. I read a great fanfic about Merlin set in space that I can't remember the title of, but it was kind of like a Firefly style AU. It was so good. We have to save this for a fanfiction bonus episode that is coming at some point, I'm sure. But anyway, yay, Merlin in space, #. That's amazing. I was on the Merlin hashtag, not to get too sidetracked at the top of the show, but I was on the Merlin tag as well recently because I was looking for things to reblog. And you know what? It has been like completely taken over by stupid Kingsman and that character named Merlin in that film and something that apparently happens to him that is all over the Merlin
tag. Oh my God. Yes.
And it really annoys me because I don't care, but I'm sure that the people who do care.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I was like but right around when Kingsman came out, I was like, oh, like, I miss Merlin. Let me go see if I can find some good fanfic. And half of the Merlin tag was inundated with Merlin. Yeah. I was like, not my Merlin.
God.
I don't want like Merlin and Eggsy fanfic. I want Merlin and Arthur fanfic.
Exactly. Like, what's his face? Mark Strong is great and all, but #not my Merlin.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
That's how it is. Yeah.
But this is a good transition into how we hype
it. It's a perfect transition. We couldn't have done it any better if we'd planned it. So tell me how you've been hyping, Pam.
Well, I have coincidentally been to see Kingsman 2.
What?
I know. Oh, talk about not my Merlin. I forgot for a minute that, like, they had a Merlin 2. Because it's, you know, it's been a while since I've been in that part of the fandom online. And I definitely think that I liked the first movie better. I think that the pacing for me was a little off in the second movie. I really feel like the movie's 2.5 hours long, about. I feel like they could have cut, like, about a half hour of content in there. Honestly, there was a point, like, right before things kind of came to a head, where I turned to my brother and I was like, what? We're still here? Like, and we didn't go very late, but I felt like the time in the theater. And that's what I hate.
I hate that feeling. Yeah.
During an action movie.
Yeah.
It really, really sucks. I did like, I thought that Channing Tatum was going to have a bigger role. He didn't. I loved Adam Pascal in this movie, though. I think Pedro Pascal. Adam Pascal, not Rent. Bad Pam. Pedro Pascal was great in this. And also a great, great cameo by Elton John. Not even a cameo. I feel like he had more to do than a normal cameo. But Elton John was like the highlight of that movie for me. I love Elton John. It was great.
Oh, interesting. That's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, tell us if you've gone to see Kingsman 2 and what you thought of it. Pam, what else have you been doing?
I wanted to really quickly talk about the Foo Fighters because they released an album on September 15th, I think, so like 2 weeks ago. And I'm not a, full disclosure, I'm not a huge Foo Fighters fan, but I do really appreciate, as like a lover of music, I do appreciate the contribution that they've made to the industry. And I appreciate Dave Grohl's passion for music. If you've never seen the documentary Sound City, by the way, it's worth a watch. It's phenomenal. So this album called Concrete and Gold is really interesting because Foo Fighters are very, like, still very inspired by, like, grunge. They were, like, one of the last, like, major rock and roll bands around, you could argue. And they've been doing this for a really long time. But I've never heard them sound quite like this. And they actually worked with this guy named Greg Kirsten, and this is the reason why I was so intrigued by this album, because he is part of this indie pop band called Bird and the Bee. They just, like, play around with a lot of, like, smooth pop and jazz, and they have, like, one of my favorite albums of all time, which is just, like, them covering Hall & Oates classics, and it's amazing.
Oh.
But he also has been working over the past few years with really, really big pop stars. He's become, like, a major producer. He's worked with Sia, and he actually worked on Adele's Hello. So he's got, like, a huge waiting list, and turns out Dave Grohl's, like, a huge fan of The Bird and the Bee. So he met this guy randomly in Hawaii and really wanted him to work on the new Foo Fighters album, but his manager's like, that's never going to happen. He's got, like, an 8-month wait list. Everybody wants this guy. He's, like, the new IT producer. And because they had become friends, like, one day he just, like, randomly let it slip out over a couple of drinks. He's like, oh, I really wanted you to work on the album, but, like, I don't think that you have, like, time. You know, like, my manager already told me it's not going to work. And the next day this guy was like, oh, but, like, if you want to knock it out, like, I have some time. So they went into the studio together, and it was, like, like I said, I've never heard the band sound quite like this. I feel like everything just got turned up a notch. Like, everything is bigger and everything is brighter. And the first track on this album, I was listening to, and it starts off really quiet and really melodic. And I turned it up because I was intrigued and I wanted to listen more. And then all of a sudden, there's just, like, this explosion of sound. And I was, like, in the middle of a coffee shop, and I was like, oh, my God. And it wasn't just like, oh, my God, this is loud, which it was. It was like, oh, my God, like, this is crazy. Like, this is amazing. And it's just, like, this beautiful partnership that shouldn't work but does. So, yeah, I mean, like, if you're looking for something to listen to, this album kind of came out of nowhere for everybody. Even if you're not a huge Foo Fighters fan, I would recommend just kind of checking it out because you might be surprised like I was.
Cool. That's a good recommendation. I like that. We're going to move into the news now, where we're going to be starting, you know, just like old times, we're going to start the show with some J.K. Rowling slash potentially Harry Potter news. We don't actually know. That's the fun thing about this story. You may have seen it on Hypebeast. Andrew has been covering it as though it was Lavender Brown. And I have to say, I'm so intrigued by this, and I'm so interested in hearing what you think, in particularly Pam. This was the topic of my Patreon bonus video this week. So if you're a patron, you may already know my thoughts about this, but I hope that we can have a little bit of a different discussion about it here. So now that I've introed it for like 5 minutes, this is the actual story. J.K. Rowling appeared with the creators of Cursed Child on CBS Sunday Morning as part of her promoting Cursed Child's move to Broadway. And she made a remark that was almost a little bit hostile in tone, I think that's fair to say, where she said, "I have no interest whatsoever in doing certain things that I know would be very popular with the fandom." She kind of declined to say exactly what it was, even when they kind of pushed her to reveal it. She said, "I think the fandom watching this will know exactly what I mean, because they know what they keep asking me for. But there's nothing there for me creatively, even though I know they'd all buy it." So, first of all, there's a couple of things that this could be. What do you think it is?
I feel like it's the encyclopedia. But
no.
I don't want to believe it's the Marauders, but if it is, like, honestly, at this point, I'm okay with it because I already have my Marauders headcanon. I don't need J.K. Rowling to screw that up, honestly. I know that it's her world, but...
See, I absolutely want to believe it's the Marauders for that reason. Because if it's the Marauders, and if she's saying, look, there's people keep asking me, there's nothing there for me creatively, what she's kind of insinuating, saying there's nothing there creatively, is she's kind of saying, well, everything you need to know about the Marauders is already in the story. Like,
no, Joe.
Everything
no.
else. Well, yes, I think so, because I think everything else that the fans have sort of done to embellish their stories, like if we take a step back and we look at it totally clinically from Harry Potter canon's point of view, like Sirius and Remus were not actually in love. Like that's a fan thing. You know, that's not the J.K. Rowling's, the story that I think she was ever intending to tell. James was kind of an asshole, like he was, and she's made that clear in the books that Harry had been, and the audience had sort of been building up this embellished, idealized version of James Potter that the actual James didn't live up to. We've seen in flashbacks, we've seen Lily and James, we've seen Sirius, and we know the story. So I think if she's talking about the Marauders, then it makes sense to me why she is not going to go there just because the fans want her to, because it's a part of the story that, as she said, if she's talking about this, that doesn't necessarily interest her creatively because there's nothing to dive into beyond kind of setting up what we already know.
Yeah.
Which I kind of understand. And I also think it's totally fair for her to sort of have the attitude that like fans might be interested in this particular part of the backstory, but I am so busy, like 50 years past that, or like 50 years beyond that, like my mind is elsewhere. Well, but if it's the encyclopedia, then I think it is a very different story. And I actually kind of am on the same page as you that I think it sounds a little bit more like she's talking about the encyclopedia. But see, here's what's interesting. Before we dive into the repercussions of that sort of statement and attitude that she has towards that, is that why would she not just tell us? Like, this is what frustrates me, is that she basically said, oh, well, I don't want my Twitter page blowing up for 3 months, so I'm not going to say what it is. The fans know what it is. Clearly, we don't know what it is. And clearly
it's one or the other. There's no way it's not. But they're equally,
but which one is
they carry equal weight. And the reason, honestly, that I think it's the encyclopedia is kind of for the same reasons that you think it's actually the Marauders. It's like there's nothing creatively for her in the encyclopedia because she's already told us everything she needs to tell us in Pottermore. She's been there, done that. There's no creativity involved in
that I want it to be the Marauders. I think it's the encyclopedia. I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to make myself feel better.
Mm. All right.
I absolutely think you're right. You know, saying things like, she's not excited about it. She knows that every single person, every single fan would buy it. I don't think that quite applies to the Marauders. Like, not everyone would buy a Marauder story. Or maybe they would. Maybe I'm underestimating her brand, but I feel
I'm pretty sure people would think that was really, it was weird. You know, like some people. Like, I'm not talking about hardcore fans. Like, obviously we will consume everything. And most hardcore fans, we all love the Marauders. We've built up all of these little theories as to what could have transpired, all that stuff. But like normal people that just casually like the books, probably going to think it's really weird to like read about these people that you've only ever seen as like middle-aged men, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I get it.
True.
I get it. But I don't know. I mean, like with Cursed Child, she's already shown that she doesn't have a problem teaming up with somebody else to allow them to kind of give a voice to stories. So at this point, like, I don't really care if Joe doesn't tackle a Marauder story, but I wouldn't be opposed to, like, somebody at some point tackling
a Marauder. Oh, I absolutely would.
Really?
I don't want them anywhere near the Marauders, because I think that that's kind of like I was alluding to before. I think that most fan headcanons are going to be proven wrong. And I think it's going to be a huge letdown, because I think the stark, bleak sort of... I think what it is that in the original story, you get the sense that the snippets of information we get about the Marauders is just like the tip of the iceberg, and that there's a lot more story underneath. But I think that that is not true. I think that the snippets we get is it. Like, it's not deep. It's not surprising. It's not revelatory. It's literally just... That's what it is. James was a bully. They became an Imagi. Peter followed them around. James fell in love with Lily. Lily left her friendship with Snape behind, or Snape kind of made her feel like she had to leave him behind. And that was it. Like, I literally think that's it. And I think that's, I mean, I don't think she's actually talking about the Marauders here. But if she was, then I could see why she wouldn't want to dive into it. And I hope that they never do, because I think it would, this is probably one of the areas of the Harry Potter fandom that is most richly thriving in terms of stories being told there. And I think that it's probably also one of the only areas of canon that hasn't been closed off to us, because she made that epilogue to book 7, and then now Cursed Child is out. So pretty much everything that happens is done. Like, we know, we can't speculate about that. And everything that's happening in the past, like with Dumbledore and everything, we're going to get that laid out for us as well. So the Marauders is pretty much like the only pocket of ambiguous canon. And I don't want her to take that away from us. But anyway.
Interesting. I mean, I'm really out of touch with like new wave Marauder headcanon. Like, this was, the Marauders were like my first foray into fandom.
I don't think it's changed. I think it's literally like a persistent thing, but it's all in our own heads. It's not actually in canon. It's something that we've constructed.
Well, honestly, I'm just hoping if anybody ever takes the reins, they just like, you know, are fueled by big ideas like the Shoebox Project or other
things like that.
And then it'll be fine. But you're right. It's like, it's
but
the
it's not
going to
be that.
You never know. I mean, what's his face?
No, I do know.
I know, but he just took fan fiction and put it on the stage.
Yeah, well, you're right. Anyway, I do want to talk about what she's probably referring to, which is the encyclopedia. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt, because the thing is that leaving it ambiguous, we can't actually judge her. Maybe that's exactly what she wanted, because she is, you know, kind of smart, that J.K. Rowling. But what the problem, obviously, with the encyclopedia, if she's saying that there's nothing there for her creatively and she doesn't want to do it, then it makes sense for the reasons that you said, you know, because as you said, Pottermore exists now. Pottermore is kind of an encyclopedia, just not in the form that we all want. But I think Pottermore sort of reflects the way in which Harry Potter, the brand, is so transmedial, you know, it's so multi-platform in a way that I don't think any other brand really is. And in some ways I think it's kind of revolutionary, you know, that Harry Potter is transcending the traditional barriers of published fiction. You know, the movies are as big as the books, the prequel movies are only movies, now it's a play, it's a website. I get that. And I think in a way, going back to like a published encyclopedia and the way that she originally planned, I can understand why she wouldn't be interested in that at this point in her career. What is frustrating about the idea that an encyclopedia is never going to come and that she's never going to tell us is that she did promise us an encyclopedia. Like, this isn't, unlike the Marauders, which is like the fans sort of quote-unquote demanding to hear that story, Joe is the person who talked about doing an encyclopedia in the first place. Like, back in 2007, she went on podcasts and she laid out all of these plans that she had for how, like, half the pages were going to be in-universe history entries and the other pages were going to be, like, her notes and her drawings and everything. It was going to be, like, basically an anthropological resource of the Harry Potter universe, like, Silmarillion style. And that was, I would love that. Like, that, there's nothing I want more than that kind of a tome. But considering how much she's expanding the world now with the past and the present and the different schools around the world, she's still working on expanding existing canon. So I totally understand why she doesn't feel like a tome, a bound, unchangeable book that she can't add anything to, like she can on Pottermore, that she can't hide any, because she still has so many secrets left to be revealed, I bet. So committing that to a book is counterintuitive. I get it. I'm totally there. But she needs to tell us, because we're waiting for the encyclopedia because she told us to wait for it. So sort of coming, I don't want to get mad at her, but like coming out with this attitude and being like, oh, my Twitter mentions. It's like, yes, of course, that's it. You promise people who love your work a thing and then you don't do the thing. You can at least tell us and allow us to be angry about it for a couple of weeks.
That's true. I just had this vision of Joe pulling a James Patterson and all of her random scribbles getting destroyed after she dies.
Or like Terry Pratchett.
But that's the one I meant, Terry Pratchett. I knew it was something with a P.
Something, yeah.
I think James Patterson's still alive. Sorry.
And like, but the thing is that I totally, like, again, from Joe's point of view, if she doesn't want to do the encyclopedia anymore, I totally understand. But like, you know, I'm just a fan standing in front of an author saying, please let me be mad at you on Twitter for pulling back your promise.
You're right, though, because she's not saying no, but she's not saying yes. So you're right. Mm-hmm. That is still like a promise that's hanging out in the air. Because she hasn't. Yeah.
And as long as we can say, oh, maybe it's the Marauders, and she still hasn't definitively said anything.
Because even after launching Pottermore, I believe, and I'm sure listeners will correct us if we're wrong, she didn't come out and say, like, oh, now that I have this fancy schmancy Swish website, like, I'm never doing an encyclopedia.
No, she didn't come out and say, this is your encyclopedia.
Right, we're all just
and it, at the beginning, it wasn't. It was like an interactive book. Like, novel.
It was supposed to be also a companion, but in a different... It wasn't supposed to be a...
It wasn't a resource.
A resource, right. It was meant to be a companion to the books.
Right. So, all in all, we're confused, and we actually... A lot of fans are, and I just really want to emphasize that it's not that I would ever sort of try to impose my opinion, like, of what she should do on her, or even if she came out and said she wasn't going to do the encyclopedia, that I wouldn't be able to understand that decision. It's just that something about the way that she was, like, protecting her Twitter mentions over being honest with her fans is a little bit grating, I think, for someone who has followed her for so long. We had a couple of tweets from listeners who had reactions to this. The Lady Ash said, I think she's referring to the Marauders story, their time at school, wizard war, etc. Also, I think we need to let the encyclopedia go. Or I am, at least. She's shown she's gotten other things she wants to work on. I can't imagine the time it would take for her to do an encyclopedia properly. To that, I would say, the Lady Ash, I would say, I agree, and I'm willing to let it go. If she tells me to let it go, you know, make like Elsa. Just sing it to the world. Oh my gosh. And Meg Roy started by sending us a rage gif from Inside Out, which was pretty funny. And then she made a good point about Joe and the Twitter argument, saying, can I just point out that being on Twitter is a choice? She can just not go on Twitter for 3 months if that's her main concern.
I mean, pen and paper was her priority for years.
Exactly. Yes. Tweets and websites.
Someone needs to show Joe how to use the mute button.
Yeah, exactly. And Meg continues like, yeah, after talking to Anjali Gupta, who's another one of the listeners, about it, I get her point of view. I just like a definitive yes or no if it isn't the encyclopedia. Totally agree. That's all we want. It's like a little bit of transparency would be nice. I think that's everything I have to say about it. Do you have anything to add?
I feel like we've gone on long enough.
I agree. I tried to do a video so that this discussion would be shorter, but I just ended up repeating myself. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. Sometimes you have to do that. And not everybody is a part of our patron, which is okay. So
true.
All right. Well, from one witch type fandom to another, what is October without Hocus Pocus, really?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were joking for a
minute. I don't know what it is.
Oh, man. I'm not joking. Selena, you're missing. Well, is Halloween a big deal in Denmark?
No.
Okay. I feel like Halloween is definitely like an American thing, right? I feel like.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if you're American, what is October without Hocus Pocus? Hocus Pocus is a national treasure. It's great. It stars Bette Midler and Kathy Nate. Nimje, I think that's how you pronounce her name. I can't ever remember. And Sarah Jessica Parker as the Sanderson sister witches. The first movie came out in 1993, and now, according to Deadline, there could be a reimagining of the tale in the works. Allegedly, the reimagining is being penned by the Royals writer Scarlett Lacey and is actually also being produced by one of the original film's producers, whose name is David Krishner. So there's no word on whether, like what this would entail, if it would just be like a complete retelling, or if they would just kind of play with the idea that, you know, these witches died and then these kids lit the black flame candle and they came back to life and tried to suck the lives out of children. This is what you're missing, Selena.
Oh my God.
I know. And this aired on the Disney Channel. It still does. I know. It's great. This movie is so great. It's so kitsch and wonderful. And it's so good. Anyway, there's no word yet on like what the script will entail, anything like that. There's no word yet on whether they'd bring back any of the original three actresses for a cameo. But this is kind of interesting because when I saw this headline, I was a little bit confused because everybody that's been involved with the original story, most notably Bette Midler, has said, like, not long ago that she would be totally down to come back and do a sequel, which I think would be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of, like, a little bit out of left field just because, like, there have been talks of sequels for the past few years, and I feel like this story always resurfaces around Halloween, which makes sense. But this is kind of the first time that we've heard that things are actually moving forward in some way.
This is fun. That's good. So many remakes. Might as well make them something that you guys, like, actually want to see.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Like, it's kind of bittersweet, right? Because I think that everybody was kind of hoping if they were going to revisit this world, that they'd kind of do it with the same characters, although they'd have to get new kids. I feel like this kind of, like, it only works with kids. I don't think that these people that played, like, teens or tweens back, you know, 20 years later or whatever. But yeah, I mean, like, the original movie totally holds up, but if they want to make something for a new generation, I feel like they'll just gobble it up. So they can't lose.
Agreed. We've got some trailers to talk about as well. This is something that I am very excited about, and you all should be as well. Our new, soon-to-be favorite movie, Annihilation, is coming out soon on February 23rd, which is somebody's birthday. It's mine. We've talked about Annihilation before. It is a female-led sci-fi movie starring Natalie Portman and Gina Rodriguez and Oscar Isaac and Tessa Thompson and Jennifer Jason Leigh and Tuva Novotny. And it is directed by Alex Garland, who also did Ex Machina. It is based on a book by Jeff Vandermeer that I started reading. It's very trippy and confusing, but I'm determined to finish it because it is going to be my favorite movie, so I feel like I should. It has a trailer out now. It's very, very evocative, exciting trailer that pretty much, like, I'm so relieved because I've been hyping up this movie so much, but this trailer actually looks really, really good. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah, it looks great. And I'm so excited. Like, I love Natalie Portman, but I'm really excited for Gina Rodriguez and Tessa Thompson. Like,
me too.
So excited. I love them both as people, and I'm so excited that they're working on something together and something of substance. You know, it's not like...
Yes, absolutely.
It just looks so meaty, and I'm so excited to see everybody step into these roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's one of the things about the trailer that maybe is a little bit... Because, I mean, I like Natalie Portman fine. She's not, like, anywhere near my list of favorite people, but she's great. But what this trailer really does is I feel like it was very Arrival-esque in tone, both in the way that, you know, you kind of see her. She's entering this territory, this wild jungle-like place, and there's this beast in there that they're sort of seeking to communicate with, which is a lot like, you know, in Arrival, they're trying to communicate with the aliens in the strange place, but also just the way in which Arrival was so heavily Amy Adams focused. Like, she was so prevalent in that movie and in every frame and all the close-ups, and that's really what it feels like this movie. I mean, it's only the first trailer, so we don't know, but it feels like that's what it's going to be, a very, very close, no pun intended, a closer movie to Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac as well, who sort of like appears to be in a coma for the movie because like he has already gone through something before the movie starts, which would be a little bit of a shame, I think, because as you said, I am maybe a little bit more excited about this movie because of Gina Rodriguez and Tessa Thompson than about anything else. So if they only end up playing like auxiliary roles, like the role that Gina Rodriguez played in that movie with the oil rig, what was it called? Deepwater Horizon. Yeah. Like, if it's going to be that one, I'm going to be super disappointed. But
although she was great, it's only the first trailer, what she did with that.
Well, she was, but she was only there for like 5 minutes, is my point.
It's awful. So, what a shame.
Yeah. She needs to be in more things and star in them as well. But anyway, the movie does look fantastic, and the trailer does look really good, and it's a really thrilling mystery and post-apocalyptic and women being scientists. Like, what's not to like? It's basically The 100. So you know I'm here for
everything. Is The 100, and everything is 100. Probably hurts.
Yes. It's probably gonna be 100. Yeah, exactly, they're all gonna die. So speaking of death, another trailer that I did want to bring up here is that the Maze Runner trilogy is concluding with The Death Cure, and this is a trilogy of movies that is sort of funny, and I don't know how you feel about it, but it's kind of gone under the radar for me a little bit because it came out at the time when, you know, Hunger Games was out and Divergent was out and Twilight had just ended and Harry Potter had just ended, and it was just a lot. And it's a shame because The Maze Runner is actually, I would argue, one of the best ones. Like, it's actually really, really solid as far as movie adaptations go. So the trailer is out and it looks really good. You know, Dylan O'Brien is front and center doing his Dylan O'Brien thing, what's not to like, and he's got the little kid from Love Actually by his side, so that's also awesome. Kaya Scodelario is there, Giancarlo Esposito is there. Have you seen this one?
I have.
Are you even a fan?
No,
are
I
you
really
up to date with the
No, I really like these movies.
Oh, good.
I really
yeah,
do.
Same.
But here's the thing. I read the books, but it's been so long and they've veered so much
they've
from
diverged,
the plot.
No pun intended. Yeah, so much.
That, like, I enjoy them in a different way, but I think I need to refresh myself because as far as it's like so funny, like this trailer, it feels like it starts off in the middle of the story because I don't remember them leaving this place. Unless you're talking about leaving the maze. I think I got confused for a bit because it was very like Divergent-esque.
No,
almost.
they've left the maze and the city.
Okay.
And yes, it is very Divergent.
Yeah,
because
like
it's pretty much
they
the same
leave
twist.
They leave the contained area. But as far as I remember, and it's been a few years, I don't remember them leaving the contained area at the end of the last movie. But they took a long break because of the Dylan O'Brien debacle. You know, he got
his
very
accident,
badly injured, and so I will go see this. But I'm very curious to see if it finds its footing after so many years, you know, because it's not fresh in people's brains anymore. So how do you rope audiences in that aren't a part of your, like, core fan base?
I think, yeah, exactly. And I think, obviously, Dylan O'Brien is a big draw. you know, he's also, he did the American Assassin as well. He's sort of, he has a very specific role that he tends
which,
to
play. Which, by the way, was
movies.
Not very good.
Oh, wasn't it?
No,
oh,
sorry, I went to see it and it. I was sorely disappointed. Mm. But I love him, but I did not
he's
like
great.
American Assassin.
Right. Well, I think he has a bit of a draw himself. And then I think also, based on this first trailer, like, I would not... They do a really good job of summing up, actually. This doesn't happen in trailers a lot, but they sort of sum up the past two movies and they show clips from the first one, the second one, which is really nice. But they also make it just feel like a fun action movie. You know, they're very much trying to make this, like... It's a new Die Hard. It's a new Maze Runner. Like, it's kind of, it's interesting the way they're marketing it. So I hope it draws people in, definitely. Dylan O'Brien, by the way, speaking of, neither me or Pam watch it, but we should probably note that Teen Wolf just wrapped up. It's done. It's over. It's complete, which is kind of sad. So I'm guessing that some Teen Wolf fans will be watching this for the, you know, nostalgia and Dylan O'Brien withdrawal alone. But I'm going to go see it. I think it looks really great. I think I should introduce my brother to these movies. I feel like he would really like it. You know, finally, a group of movie about a bunch of dudes, right? Only one girl. What a relief.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't in the book. Again, it's been a while since I read both.
Okay, there's two girls.
No, but in the book, like, there is, like, the same story is happening, but with girls. You know, like, they have the different mazes with all girls and with all boys. And
Yeah. But the story follows the boys.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately. But it's still good.
Another story that follows girls.
Yeah, talk about girl. So, Pretty Little Liars fans, you know, we had this really emotional goodbye to the series, which, if you liked it or not, probably tainted. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the end of this series, but it doesn't really matter because don't even worry about saying goodbye. We're getting a Pretty Little Liars spinoff over at Freeform. This has officially been greenlit by the network. It's called The Perfectionists, and it's an adaptation of the book series of the same name, which is by Sarah Shepherd. And Marlene King, who developed the original series, is also coming back for the pilot, which is set to star Sasha Peters and Janelle Parrish, who play Allie and Mona in the original series. So you're still going to get to see some familiar faces. You're probably going to get more of what you enjoyed from the series, given that the showrunner is coming back at least for the pilot and setting the tone for the rest of it. So yeah, like that's a thing that's happening. So for better or worse, here
now,
it comes.
Now, may I ask you, aren't these two characters like super popular in the fandom? Because I feel like obviously the four main liars were always the main draw of the show.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Allie is that she's not there, but she is. Because have you ever seen Pretty Little Liars?
I've seen like maybe a season and a half.
Okay, so when the show starts, Allie is dead, allegedly.
Yeah.
And then she's not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of like setting a show about like Lily from Veronica Mars, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird because it is kind of, I know she gets a bigger role later on because she's not actually dead, but
right.
I don't know. It seems a little bit weird just to make this particular spinoff. Like if it was maybe one of the liars involved, I got it. But do you find this interesting? Are you going to watch it?
I'm not sure because honestly, like I dropped off Pretty Little Liars around season 4, I think season 5. The interesting thing about Pretty Little Liars is that Marlene King always meant it to be a 5-season series. And then it was doing so well for Freeform. It's like it was for the longest time the cornerstone of their programming that they asked her to stretch it out over the course of 7 seasons. So that's like what we ended up getting. And I think that you can really feel that in the plot and the fabric of the show. Like, because it's not just like, I think the show was a little bit more intriguing when there was just like one A and then you have like Uber A and A Supreme. It's like all these A's and you can't keep track. So, according to this article, which was written by Kendra, who has been keeping up with the series, at the end of the original show, Allison and Emily are raising a family, and then Mona is actually in Paris, and she's raising Alex and Mary Drake as, like, basically she's just, like, I don't know. Mona was always, like, really creepy, and I think that that was, like, the draw, but I don't think she's definitely not, like, the biggest character. I think, like, Pretty Little Liars, like, the fandom, I think a lot of people stand more for the actresses than they do for the characters. Like, there's a little bit of, like, disarray, you know, because I think you could argue mm-hmm. that people were, like, really, really invested in, like, in Arya and Ezra, you know, or, yeah. like, Spencer and Caleb. But as, like, actors, like, everybody's obsessed with Shay Mitchell, who's just completely skyrocketed, right, you know? Right, so it's yeah. really hard to kind of pinpoint, you know, like, this was the most popular character. Because a lot of people,
but that's
like,
why
you
I
know,
feel like...
So it's hard.
When this was originally announced, I actually thought I had mixed up Allison with the girl, the blonde girl of the Four Liars.
Hannah.
What's her name? Hannah. And I was like, oh, Hannah and Mona, fun. Because mm-hmm. also I feel like they have a little bit of a dynamic. But now that it's like the two non-mains, I don't know. It's weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm like getting so stuck on this, but I just find it such an odd way to do a spinoff.
Somebody who is much more familiar with The Perfectionists and the Pretty Little Liars book series made a really, really good point in the comments on HiBooble.com. Daryl Lay said, The Perfectionist book has no connection to the PLL universe save the author, so they will somehow have to write in the characters of Mona and Allie. Seems like a very awkward choice or a real shoehorning of PLL brand to generate hype. So that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
I've never read the book, so I wouldn't know, but I could see for sure, just because like we learned a lot about Allie after she came back and like what she had been doing and stuff like that, I could see how people might be a little bit more interested to see more of her, because in a way both of these characters are kind of like secondary characters. So
right,
I guess it makes
exactly.
sense to bring them to the forefront, because it's like there's more wiggle room to tell their stories. And maybe to potentially yeah. flash back in comparison to our four main liars who have already, like, we've already seen so much of them. Plus, like, they're all busy with other stuff, like, from a logistics standpoint. Lucy Hale and Shay Mitchell, I think they're both doing TV shows. And then I know that Ashley Benson has been cast in a few movies. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've got another TV story, which is talking a little bit about Game of Thrones. You know, we've entered the long winter, so there's not too much Game of Thrones news to talk about anymore. But we have learned the season 8 director lineup. So this is obviously the 8th and final season, the final batch of directors. And it's going to be really interesting because they're bringing back a couple of fan favorites, including Miguel Sapochnik, who directed the final two episodes of season 6, which was The Battle of the Bastards and The Winds of Winter. So some really spectacularly good episodes. And he actually won an Emmy for his work on Game of Thrones. David Nutter is another one who won an Emmy for his work, is coming back as well. And he did The Reigns of Castamere, which was the Red Wedding episode. So some really, really big hitters here and a little bit disconcerting considering what we probably can expect from the final season. And the final names revealed for season 8, which is only going to have 6 episodes, is David Benioff and Dan Weiss. They will direct the finale of the series. They have directed episodes separately before, but they haven't directed one together, so that's going to be it. So since there's only like two individual and one pair, and there's 6 episodes, it's likely that, you know, each of them will direct 2, or maybe like there's a couple of more directors that haven't yet been announced, maybe George R. R. Martin is going to take a crack at it. Who knows? But it's going to be pretty fun. Maybe we can even expect, dun, 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 a woman. Which would be a series first. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But some good names and some really impressive. They've clearly picked like the cream of the crop in with the case of these two fantastic directors that have brought us some of the most epic and memorable episodes of the show. So yay, I'm excited.
I'm excited too, and like just
2019, here we come.
Yeah, visually too, those episodes were just stunning, so mm-hmm. it's gonna be good. Well, here's something that's been rocking the internet.
The biggest news, like
the
ever.
Biggest news of the week. Twitter has been toying with the idea of raising the character limit for a while, but earlier this week they announced that they are officially doubling their character count limit to 280 in a global test, which will allow a few maybe lucky users to take advantage of the new extra space. They released a statement announcing this, which was very long. They definitely took advantage. It's almost like they really needed to make sure they hit 280 to show everybody that it's look at what we can do.
Yeah.
So Twitter wrote, although we feel confident about our data and the positive impact this change will have, we want to try it out with a small group of people before we make the decision to launch with everybody. What matters most is that it works for our community. We will be collecting data and gathering feedback along the way. We're hoping for your tweets run into character limits, which should make it easier for everyone to tweet. So that was kind of like the statement explaining why they did it. And then in a tweet, the creator Jack Dorsey wrote, this is a small change, but a big move for us. 140 was an arbitrary choice based on the 160 character SMS limit. Part of how thoughtful the team has been in solving a real problem people have when trying to tweet. At the same time, maintaining our brevity, speed, and essence. Mm. People are not pleased about this, or at least people on my timeline have not been pleased about this. I do kind of feel that, like, my favorite thing about 140 characters is that it forces me to think about whether or not I really need to tweet what I want to tweet if it doesn't fit, and yeah. whether or not I actually need to, like, am I just tweeting a thread out of laziness, or does this really, like, or can I say it shorter? You know, it's kind of like a lesson in editing, but again, like, we're both writers, so that makes sense for us. My favorite thing about this was, like, when all the copy editors got a hold of Jack's statement. Yes, and just started copy editing. It's like, hey, look, and then people would be like, oh wait, I saved you another four characters. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not really necessary. And purely from, like, I don't know, just like from a user-friendly standpoint, it's like when you're scrolling on your phone, which is how I usually consume Twitter, it's like the more tweets that show up on a screen length, the better, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about, like, how much space 280 characters is going to take up on top of, like, video or GIF or whatever people decide to include, that's, like, basically going to be a whole post for one, like, screen width span. So it's not as digestible, you know? What do you think? Because we both use Twitter a lot.
I'm conflicted. I use Twitter way too much. I'm super conflicted about this because my instinct is to be like, who the fuck cares? Like, find other things to be annoyed about because really, this is nothing. But then I actually saw a couple of these tweets pop up on my timeline and I don't like it. I really don't like it. I'm going to be one of those people that are going to be grumpy about it. And now I, like, hate myself and this change. So it's, like, doubly annoying because it's too much. You know, like, if you've seen those blocks of text, like, not only, as you say, when you're scrolling on your phone, but just in general, like, when you see that much text, it is proven, and this is weird to me that Twitter is doing this now, because countless studies of how people use the internet and decreasing attention spans have proven that when things break into more than three lines, then you stop paying attention to them. So, like, even when we do articles on Hyperbole, I think we try to do, like, three or four lines the most per paragraph.
But that's not
and
even,
that's
like...
enough.
That's not even online. That's even, like, basic print rule, too.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. And you see so many websites breaking up stories into even less. And That's because of studies of people's eye movements, you know, like scientific trackings of how our eyes move around on the screen. So that you see those blocks of text show up on your feed and they're like pretty much like, what's it called when there's a margin on each side? So like it looks like a block of text, like there's not really, if you just write something out in a tweet, like it doesn't sort of... the lines, they kind of just, what's the word for it? You know, like when you're formatting something in a Word document and you can either choose to right side, like the lines are like different lengths, or you can choose them to all be like uniform, like in a book. I'm sure people know what I'm talking about. Anyway, the current way that Twitter is structured, at least on laptop, is that you have one full line and then the line below it never gets quite out. So it's not like even, and that helps reading comprehension. But when you just have those blocks of text of like 4 or 5 lines that just run straight through, it's really hard to read. And maybe Twitter's trying to make us smarter. I would be okay with that. But I find it to be a really weird move because I can already tell that my eyes are glazing over what people are trying to say.
Yeah, it's...
However...
Oh, go on.
I was just going to say, however, obviously people are being trolls because they have 280 character access. So they're doing it and they're making themselves obnoxious on purpose. I think that both with the prevalence that we are already seeing of Twitter threads that clearly prove that people find ways to express themselves in like more than one tweet if they feel the need to, and my own personal struggle that I almost always find that I have about like 5 or 6 characters too much, even when I've made all the cuts. And that leaves me to like having to make like a 2-tweet thread about something where if I had just had space for 2 more letters, I would have been okay. I'm actually selfishly kind of excited about this. As long as you can kind of trust Twitter users to not just put other obnoxious blocks of text everywhere, which I'm not sure we can. So I'm like, I'm really torn.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would be happier. I really think we don't need more than like, we're at 140 right now, like 160. That's really what you need. Because usually you just need those 20 extra.
You just need a little bit of more.
You just need like the 20 extra for like the hyperlinks. They're not the hype, you know, like that's what takes up the most space.
Right, they said they were going to take the link that not have that count, but it still counts.
It still counts. It's 16 every time. I know this because I pimp out my own stories, you know, like it's, even if you put it through a tiny URL generator, it's still like, it's still between like 14 to 16 characters. So it kind of sucks. I was like, like listening to somebody talk about this, and they made a really good point. It's like you gotta really like somebody to sit through 260 characters on Twitter. That's the thing. It's like I will read your blog if I love you, and there are some people that I'll just like read everything that they write, you know. But Twitter's not the place for that. I would rather just have you like tease me and then link me to your blogger or something, and then I'll read whatever you have to say in my own time.
On the other hand, though, I am sure that it's just a matter of acclimation, you know, like anything else on Twitter. Like we bitch about every single, not us, but like people in general complain about everything, and we're still going to use it and we're going to get used to it in no time. But it is weird. It's an interesting, and it's fun to see people freak out about it and then get mad about other people freaking out about it like I just did, which is also annoying. Like basically everyone's annoying, and now we have like double the space to be annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
I would be totally in favor of this if Twitter compromised, and because tweets can now be twice as long, my tweet count has been cut in half. I would be okay with that because then I look less obsessed with Twitter. And you know, it actually works out really well for like foreign, at least Danish language tweets, because our words are like twice as long as English words.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah.
Do you tweet in Danish a lot?
No, I don't never tweet in Danish.
Well, there you go.
People in Denmark don't really use Twitter. Maybe this is Maybe this is going to be like the Danish Twitter revolution.
Oh, maybe. Hey, I'm all for more interconnectedness around the world, even if I can't understand what you're saying. There's like a nifty translate
button.
They have
a translate
button. Yeah, exactly. I will say, though, that like I could see like the benefits to this if you cross-post. So like sometimes I'll push things out from Instagram to Twitter. So you won't have to worry about awkward cutoffs and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And,
but who knows? Maybe that was like, maybe this is like their, oh, we decided we're not going to get rid of the like links counting towards your characters. So like, we're going to give you more space.
Give you more characters.
I don't know.
Sure.
Let us know what you think, though.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys have like 280 reactions to this, and we want to hear them all. So send them our way. We're going to move into TV show of the week now, where we have, you know, it's the TV season, it's fall, lots of things are premiering or just in general being awesome, and we have a lot of things to talk about. So why don't you go ahead with your first one?
Sure. I want to talk about This Is Us because I think this was like the big premiere of the season, or like one of the biggest premieres of the season. I have a confession to make that I also very lightly made on Twitter. I feel like I'm dead inside, like something is wrong with me.
Oh, no.
Because I'm pretty sure I'm the only person that did not cry during this premiere. And I could think of like five different things that have made me cry over the course of the last 2 weeks. And This Is Us was not one of them. I'm sorry. I still enjoyed it, but
maybe
nothing.
You were just waking up to the emotional manipulation.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
Just
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I'm still watching. I'm still invested in some of the characters, like the story arcs. I'm just curious to see where they go with it. Because I think that while This Is Us is not the perfect show, there are some bright spots. And I felt even like worse about myself because the little icon on Twitter for the hashtag was a box of tissues. I was like, don't need these. Just give them away to someone else because I feel nothing.
Aw.
I know.
Well, that's sad.
I know. That's the saddest part. But if you're a normal person, you probably were inundated with all the feels because arguably this was a very emotionally charged episode.
And we have a couple of good shows to talk about. I'll go first. There's a lot of good, you know, The Good Wife, The Good Place, The Good Doctor, The Good. There's another good. Anyway, I want to talk about The Good Place, which is running on NBC. The third episode, quote unquote, just aired. It's airing in a couple of hours. Have you seen it? I don't want to spoil you.
No, I'm not caught up at all. But go ahead. I mean, like, it's okay. My own fault.
I'm not going to say anything too specific. It's basically the Good Place, if you're not familiar with it, is a new comedy by Michael Schur, who obviously also does Brooklyn Nine-Nine and did Parks and Rec and The Office and stuff. And it's a wonderful comedy starring Kristen Bell about like the afterlife, basically, and these people that ended up in the bad place and they're in the good place. And it's a whole big thing, not to spoil too much season one. But season two is really fun so far. And the third episode, so the second one, because the first one was a two-part premiere, sees Eleanor and Chidi develop in an interesting way that I feel like I saw it coming, but I didn't see it coming. So that's kind of fun. And I'm like so here for it. I love Chidi. I think that Chidi is like the most fantastic character, like on television in general. He's so great. And we get a little bit more of Tahani as well. And, you know, you begin to get a sense of how the season is going to take shape. And I will say that next week's episode is probably where the season sort of properly takes shape. So we're still in like the beginning phases, but it's just so much fun. And the new character, Vicky, who was a real Eleanor last year, and this year, obviously she's playing herself. She's great. She's so fun. And I think that if you like The Good Place, then you really probably enjoy her as well. I'm really, really excited to hear what the listeners think about The Good Place season two, because I've fallen in love with this show. And I actually went back and watched the entirety of season one because I hadn't really been paying attention the first time. And I wanted to see, because I felt like the first time I watched it, I felt a little bit cheated in the finale. And I felt like maybe they were just kind of making things up as they went along. But then I went back and it all tracks. Like, it's so well planned out. And it just made me infinitely more interested in the show, because I like when they actually care about story continuity, especially in comedies, because you don't see that a lot. So A+ recommend The Good Place.
It's really funny you mentioned that, too, because I covered the show when the year it premiered at Comic-Con. And they showed us the pilot. And while the pilot's really funny and it's really enjoyable and it makes you want to watch more, one of the biggest concerns that I had and also brought up in the press room was like, how do you balance what was seemingly random at the time with like actual plot that moves the story forward? And it was kind of hard to imagine that, having just watched one 30-minute episode, but they've done a really great job of doing that. So far.
They've done such a good job.
And I love that you're able to see that, like, going back to rewatch it, because it makes me want to do that too, now that you've mentioned it.
You should. You really should. I highly recommend it. Like, you will see so many things, especially after going into season two, like things that are happening in season two, they are threaded through season one as well. Like, I don't know how many seasons they have planned out, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's at least a couple. Like, this, it clearly draws its inspiration from Lost. And I think it's a lot like what I enjoyed about How I Met Your Mother as well, which was this sort of idea of an end game and of a a planned out mystery. And I feel like The Good Place does the same, but in a much more like interesting way than than How I Met Your Mother did. And I'm really curious. I have some theories that are basically, they're mostly based on episode 4, so I can't really talk about them yet, but I have an article going up on Hypebeast about that as well, about where it's all going. And if it's going where I think it's going, it's going to be good. Or should I say bad? Medium? Who knows? You'll have to tune in and see.
Well, I watched another show with good in the title this week. I tuned into the premiere of The Good Doctor, which is ABC. ABC's new medical drama? Yeah, ABC's new, I remember this because I was watching Dancing with the Stars, which is my guilty pleasure. I don't know why, but it is. This is how I de-stress, you guys. The Good Doctor premiered earlier this week. It stars Freddie Highmore, who's coming off of Bates Motel as a young surgeon with autism. And the show is really, the idea of it is really interesting. I'm actually a little bit more curious about the backstory, and it kind of goes back and forth between like his childhood and how he got to where he is and stuff like that. First episode is very action-packed, you know, like right away he kind of gets his hands dirty and has to save somebody. And I'm going to give it a few more episodes. I'm not really sure if I'm going to keep watching. I will say that the dialogue is very, very heavy with the medical dialogue, which like sounds like, oh, of course it would be. But I feel like it's not as easy to digest as like a Grey's Anatomy. Like I feel like the medical jargon in Grey's Anatomy is easier to follow along with than like what The Good Doctor does in the first episode, which is weird because it was just really strange. Like they have like these really long like monologues where they're explaining exactly what's happening in like really scientific terms, and it's really fast, like Aaron Sorkin fast, and you're just like, wait, what? So maybe it was like, I don't know if it's like a style thing, it was like meant to be done on purpose or what, but it did throw me off a little bit. I also didn't realize that Antonia Thomas, who was on Misfits, is in this. So I was really excited about that when I realized that she plays a doctor in there.
I love her.
Yeah, I love her too. So I'm going to give it a few more episodes before I make my final decision because I really like Freddie Highmore and I love Antonia Thomas. I haven't seen her in anything in a while. So yeah, good enough, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be watching all season.
All right, so we're going to move into listener feedback now. We have a bunch of tweets and a couple of emails to get through. So let's kick it off with Alejandra Claro. Do you want to get that one?
Sure. Alejandra says, have you guys seen the Wonder Woman Honest trailer? I would like to hear your reactions. Are you a fan of these, right? I don't really care for the Honest trailers.
Oh, no.
I know. And I get the emails every time they come out. They're PR people like really want me to write about them. So I'm glad that you write about them.
I don't get any emails. I just write about them like of my own free will.
I should just send them over your way.
Yeah. Honest Trailers, along with the Everything Wrong With videos, really sort of do a lot to sort of demystify the movies that we watch. And I really enjoy them. And the only ones that I refuse to watch are for movies that like legitimately are like maybe my top 10 favorite movies of all time, which Wonder Woman is not, I should say. It's great, but it's not like untouchable for me. So I was okay watching this Honest trailer and it was very, very funny. And I like how they call out some of the bullshit, you know, like they are really good, I find, at being fair and being like, quote unquote, woke, if that's, you can say that. Like they're very good at sort of calling out some issues and sort of for Wonder Woman particularly, they were like, yeah, you know, it's amazing that movie starring a woman and it can also be a good movie, like go figure, you know. And it's like, yeah, duh, obviously. So very funny. That's my reaction. I wrote up the story in Hypebeast about it as well, so maybe I have some more reactions in there. And Lindsay Howard says, fall television, what returning shows are you most excited for and what new ones will you be checking out? I can't wait for This Is Us to come back, and I'm excited to check out Law and Order, True Crime, The Menendez Murders. We talked, if you're a Patreon, we did release a bonus discussion talking a little bit about our fall TV shows. And if you're not, do you have like a couple of shows that you're excited for?
Yeah, for returning, I'm excited for Outlander, which is already back. I'm excited for, even though I have some problems with it, I am excited about This Is Us. I'm excited to get on that train because the fan base is like really passionate. So I'm very intrigued by them. I'm excited for Riverdale. I'm excited for Stranger Things. And yeah, new shows. I checked out the pilot for Young Sheldon, which just got its full series order. I'm surprised that it took them that long to do that. That was enjoyable. The Good Doctor, I watched that. And also, there was one more. Oh, I started watching the pilot for The Mayor, and it didn't hook me, which was unfortunate. But I think I'm going to give it another shot.
Mm. I am very embarrassed to say that I am kind of looking forward to checking out Once Upon a Time again.
Yeah, no, me too. I forgot about that. Okay, we're on the same boat.
It looks really good. And like, I hate this because I have started and quit this show like a billion times. And I legitimately feel like I am under the Storybrooke curse because I cannot leave. And it's so dumb. And every time I watch it, I'm so disappointed. But I still come back because somewhere inside of me, I hope that the show is actually going to get good. And like, even though Emma isn't there, I love Emma. It's like a whole new era. But maybe because it's a whole new era, there's actually a chance that it's going to be good this time. They just released some images that look amazing. I'm going to watch that. I don't know when exactly it premieres, but I'll probably have a review up on it when it's out.
Lovisa says, awesome episode as always. Loved your talk about the winner's curse. Also, you guys should totally make a hype special about fan fiction. Oh my God, I would love to do this.
I would. Done and done. Definitely going to do that at some point. Yes.
Remind us.
We'll mark that in the book.
Mark it in the book. Let's put a pin on that conversation. Let us know what you'd like to, if you like, write us back, Lovisa, and let us know like what exactly you'd like to hear us talk about, because they're... I'm just thinking about how massive the topic of fan fiction is. So
we basically could only do like bonus about fan fiction forever, and we would have enough to talk about. So yeah,
that's true.
And Laura Morrow says, what episode of a show or series of episodes still gets you in the emotions every time when you watch? And then she says, for it's definitely either. I don't know what that means. Every time you watch, I mean... For me, I feel like there's a bunch of Buffy episodes that could fit this. Pretty much every Buffy episode. Is that a cheat answer? I get very emotional when I watch Buffy. I get very emotional when I watch the Battlestar Galactica miniseries that started the show. And I get very, very emotional when I watch a certain episode of Merlin that shall not be discussed because hashtag spoilers. Yeah,
seriously. I feel like there are, actually, there are a few episodes of Merlin that I get a little emotional over.
There's a couple of episodes of Doctor Who, like the one where Rose and the Doctor are separated in the separate universes. Same. That one's very sad.
Yeah.
A couple of the 100 episodes that gets me in the emotions for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. How about you?
There are a couple of Lost episodes that have moved me to tears. Also, the season, the series finale of Dawson's Creek gets me every time. It's so, I think it's so sad. What else? There are a few Gilmore Girls episodes that get me too. The episode in, I think it's season 6, where Rory fails, like where she... She doesn't get the internship she wants, and Lorelai says a setback is really just a set up for future accomplishments. That one gets me every time.
That's nice.
What else? Usually, like, the series finales are the ones that get me. Like, the How I Met Your Mother series finale, the two-parter, also makes me cry. I don't know why. I just have a lot of feelings, okay? And usually it's series finales, like long-standing shows. Because, like, I could say the same thing about, like, Boy Meets World. It's just, like, because you've spent so much time with these people. You feel like you know them, so.
Yeah. I would say, just to pick a couple of where it's not, like, easy because it's like, oh, character death, it's so sad. I would say that probably the three episodes that make me really emotional that has nothing to do with death is one of them is the Buffy season 4 premiere, where the freshman, where she goes to college. That one that has come with me everywhere I've gone because I moved around a lot. I've gone to new schools a lot. I've moved countries a lot. And that one is always the one that I've, you know, put my suitcase on the floor and I've thrown myself on the bed that didn't have a cover on it yet. Probably gross. Probably shouldn't admit that. But anyway, and I pulled out my laptop and I put on The Freshman, and the fact that Buffy felt so alone, but she was still a badass vampire slayer, but she was allowed to feel these isolations and stuff, that really sort of was very, like, comforting to me. It was, like, kind of my comfort blanket episode.
Mm, that's a great episode. I should rewatch that. I love that
It episode. Is. There's, like, aspects of that episode that I absolutely cannot stand. Like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, Sunday, the villain in that one. I think she's super annoying. But, like, the bits with Buffy and the posters in different colors and Willow being totally in her A game and Buffy just feeling totally lost, I love that. I think it's so relatable. And then the season two finale of Alias is extremely moving. It features I'm not going to spoil it just in case anyone's going to watch it, but it features a plot device that throws everything off its axis and sort of really puts some things into perspective, and it's really emotional and shocking mm-hmm. to watch. And then I also just wanted to shout out to the 100 season 4 finale, which obviously is the one that closed out this most recent season, because I feel like one of the things that I love so much about The 100 is the emotionality of the main characters and the ways that they are legitimately care about each other and work together and have come so far and still have so far to go. And the way that the finale and the episode before, which wasn't really a two-part finale, but it kind of feels that way. The way that it pulled some of the strings together and kind of allowed the action to take a backseat and allow the emotion of the characters to really shine through really got to me and really made me sort of... I mean, I've always loved the show, but those two episodes kind of affected me a lot. So yeah, shout out to them.
I also get really emotional over, like, sappy romance, like in Grey's Anatomy, where Meredith goes, like, what does she say? She says, like, pick me, choose me, love me. That makes me really sad. It's not sad, but it just, like, tugs at my heart. I don't know. All right. I think I skipped accidentally. So I think we're down here where you highlighted.
Three Boys Club.
Three Boys Club says, Outlander fan listening here. Yay! Jamie is perfection. Hope you love him soon.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
But to each their own. Maybe you'll be a Frank girl.
Maybe I will. And Jewel Gamache is back. She says, I somehow fell 6 months behind on episodes, but I'm finally catching up. I missed this podcast. We missed you too, Jewel. You haven't been commenting for a while. It's been very sad. She's also said that she's updating the Goodreads group as she goes. So Jewel is so wonderful and has been compiling a list of all the books that we talk about and recommend on Hype for the listeners. And there's a Goodreads group. It's just called Hype Podcast, I think. And you can go join that and, you know, keep up to date on all the books that we are reading. And she's been updating it, so all the most recent ones that we've been talking about will be on there as well. So that's such a good resource, and we really, really appreciate Jewel doing that for us. She also says, I wish I didn't fall so far behind. I have so many thoughts to contribute to Convos from April. Feel free to send them in. There's never an expiration date on
send them out of context. Well, it'll be fun to try to figure out what you're talking about. All right, we have another comment here from Laura who says, I know you all may have fell off of This Is Us train, but I really loved the first episode. I need answers, but I know it will kill my emotions, but massive props to the big three teenage actors. This is definitely their season to shine. Yeah, you know what? She's totally right. There is a wonderful scene with the teens in the first episode back. It was good.
Hmm. Kelpie says, I love Outlander, Pam. And Selena, how can you not like Jamie? Och, you're a wee dunderhead lassie. You know what? It's because of things like that I don't like Jamie.
But Jamie wouldn't say that to you.
Well, maybe he would. Maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe I just don't know him well enough. Maybe you're right.
I don't know. But the thing is, too, is like I feel like characters like Jamie Fraser have been so hyped up in fandom for so long that sometimes people come in, they're expecting one thing and they get another and they're like, this guy's not that great, you know?
Yeah.
It's just sad, but... What is what it is.
He's no Thelonious Job. I'm kidding.
That's amazing. Okay, Raven says, started the 100 day, at this point more than half done with the first season. Needless to say, I'm hooked.
Oh my God.
Another happy customer.
I feel like, once you start watching the 100 and it just like plows along, it's just, how can it not hook you? I hope you're enjoying your almost name twin, Raven, on the show.
Oh yeah, Raven's the best.
She's the best, yeah. And finally, we have a tweet from Rebecca Klaus who says, have either of you ladies been able to catch the premiere of The Good Doctor? Oh,
me.
Yes. The answer is yes. It's really good. And Freddie Highmore is incredible.
Yeah, he's really good in this. I will agree.
And then we're going to finish off with a few emails. The first one from Meg. Do you want to get that one?
Yes. It's a funny one. I just want to, I'm reading the first sentence here. Meg, we call you out because we love you. Well, since you call me out on the show every time I tweet about maybe sending you a ton of thoughts and then not doing it in time for the next show, I'm hoping this gets to you in time. It did. Yay. About Outlander. Yes, I agree with all of Pam's extremely emotional thoughts about it. I haven't read the books. I've just heard tell from one of my friends and read summaries online. And I liked Frank a lot more this season than I expected to. I see where both Frank and Claire are coming from in their dissatisfaction with the marriage, and my heart breaks for them. My only frustration with the storyline is how rushed it was, and I wish we had seen more of Frank and Bree's relationship, since he was clearly her favorite parent. There's like a lot of spoilers here, but that's okay. I really, really, really appreciated y'all's discussion on the bull type. I absolutely love the show, and it surpassed Wynonna Earp as my favorite of the summer. I was happy with how Kat and Sutton's storylines wrapped up, though like Selena, I wish Sutton had ended up with Alex. But Jane's ending frustrated me. At first, I thought I was angry at Jane for taking the job, but after listening to y'all talk about it, I realized I was much more frustrated with the show itself. Jane's been a Scarlet writer for, what, a few months and suddenly has an unbelievable opportunity? A startup is willing to risk tens of thousands of dollars on a typical millennial voice who hasn't even written 10 pieces? It's the bold type's version of a Raven, and then dragon traveling across the entirety of Westeros in 20 minutes. The point is, thank you for your discussion and helping me to focus my thoughts on where my true frustrations are. I really hope they get a second season so that the writers can address some of these concerns.
Those
are all really good points. Yeah.
And we have an email from Destiny who says, hey gals, since you're always looking for strong females, I thought I would tell you about Britt Marling. She's a young actor, writer, producer who has been nominated and has won several awards in the independent film genre. A friend recommended a Netflix original series she has done. I looked it up and stayed up until 3 a.m. binging the first four episodes because, wow, it's so good. It's called The OA and stars Britt as a girl who goes missing for 7 years, and when she returns, she's no longer blind. In an intriguing story, she enlists the help of 5 strangers to help her find someone she was trapped with. The show captures you from the very first moment and keeps you wondering what happens next. It also stars big-name actors such as Jason Isaacs and Scott Wilson. It was created by Britt Marling, who is a genius at storytelling and a brilliant actress. I highly recommend checking out the show as well as her other movies. I signed up for Netflix just to watch this show, and I'm not disappointed, and I cannot wait to finish the first season. Keep up the amazing podcast. Oh my gosh. Well, this Britt sounds wonderful. It's funny that her name is Britt because I've seen like the posters in the OA on Twitter, on Netflix and stuff, and I've actually been like considering checking it out, and I thought it was Britt Robertson.
That's really funny. I really like this show. Yeah, but I will say that for me, my brother and I binged this when it first came out. It took me like 2 or 3 episodes to really get invested, but it's really good. Like, once you get there, it's really good. And maybe I'm just stupid. I've talked a little bit before on the show about how I tend to turn my brain off when I am, like, watching things so that, like, I'm more surprised by quote-unquote plot twists. But I feel like I really didn't see this one coming. And I'm curious to see what they do with season 2, which, as far as I know, has been greenlit over on Netflix. There's just no timeline for it. But I know that Britt Marling has a few ideas. It's just going to be interesting to see how they get from where they left things to where they're potentially going to go.
Cool. Yeah, the poster intrigues me enough that I'm curious about checking it out. So maybe I will.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be curious to hear what you think. Also, Jason Isaacs is in this, and he's really good, too, but really creepy. All right, Buddy Anderson says, OMG, I just watched season 2, episode 8 of The 100. My heart is breaking. What is this show doing to my feels? No. This is all your already? Fault. This is how I felt when Wells died, too.
Yeah.
Like, right away, I was like, what is this?
I know. Yeah, Pam, this is all your fault.
Yeah, this is all my fault. Buddy continues, but all the crying aside, I'm loving The 100 so much. I've been binging all week and it's kind of taking over my life. It's so good. The plot keeps surprising me and the characters are amazing. Finn was one of my favorite characters from the beginning, but I love all of them except Murphy. Murphy gets better. Just give him some time. Oh
no, you're going to love Murphy, I bet.
I'm even starting to love Bellamy after wishing he would just die already through half of season one. Now I'm trying really hard not to get too attached to Lexa because I've been spoiled like literally everybody else on the planet. And I'm trying to spare myself from more heartbreak. I'm a bit sad I didn't watch The 100 along with you, but at least I can listen back to your 100 specials. I'll get back to my binge now. Thank you for one of my favorite podcasts. That's really sweet. Thanks, Aww, Betty.
Thank you for listening. And thanks for watching The 100. And I'm so glad you like it. And I will say that heartbreak is about like 35% of why this show is good. So prepare yourself, I think. But hopefully it's all worth it. Interesting that you liked Finn. I really liked Finn on my first watch, and I like him less now, having gone back and watched it and sort of had it contextualized by some fan conversation. But yeah, I think he was a very contradictory character, I will say. And I was definitely sad when he died. It was one of the show's best episodes, I think. Anyway, keep us posted on what you think as you move along and let us know if you ever feel like you're going to start liking Murphy, because I would be curious to see how that works out. Okay, we have to end the show now, but I just did really quickly wanted to say that I have been watching The 100 along with my brother, who's watching it for the first time, and he is hilarious. Like, we just finished season 3. He is so into it, and he is watching it. We're sitting next to each other on the sofa. He cannot sit on the sofa. He scrambles up on the sofa, like puts his legs up and like sits up on the back of the sofa and goes onto the ground, and half the time I think he's gonna like run out the room, and he's like, no, what is happening? Oh my god, I can't believe it. And then he's like commentating the morality of it. He's like the ideal viewer of The 100, I feel like, because he's like, but last episode he did this and now he's doing this, but that means that what Jaha is doing is this, and blah blah blah. And he just he's like half watching the show and half talking to me,
and they're so cute.
He is so into it. It's like all of the like primary emotions, he's feeling all of them, and he is so attached to the show, and his favorite characters keep changing. Like, he loved Jaha for a while, but he no longer loves Jaha, but now he loves Murphy, and he loves Indra, and he loves Kane and Abby. And spoiler alert, I'm not gonna say anything, if Betty is listening that's just rude, but there's something with Kane and Abby that made him like almost fly into the air of excitement. So he's fun to watch The 100 with, for sure. All right. Anyway, enough The 100 talk. We're going to wrap up the show here. If you guys have anything that you would like to talk to us about, or any comments you have on anything we talked about today, or any comments or suggestions for future episodes, you can send them in to us either via email, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you're interested in becoming a patron subscriber and getting some of the benefits over there, you can head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast. At the moment, we are doing weekly videos, alternating weeks, and we are releasing one bonus discussion segment every week, and this one is going to be about Star Trek Discovery, which we have both watched, and we're planning some changes to our Patreon that will be coming out hopefully within the next couple of weeks. We're going to change the tiers around a little bit more. We're going to introduce some new features, so stick around and stay tuned for that. And we hope that everyone has a wonderful week, and we will see you back here next week for episode 163. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, guys.
Bye.